This series is one entitled Lord of the Rings, Experiencing God's Best in Your Family. And we'll be talking about a lot of things. We'll be talking about singleness before we get done in this. We'll be talking about courtship. We'll talk about marriage. How do you know who you're to marry? Those sort of things. We're going to do how do you fall back in love with someone you're married to but aren't sure you love anymore. That's a pretty significant. In fact, I'll make this statement. Every great marriage typically has two stages. You fall in love before you're married, and you learn to fall in love while you're married. And we'll talk that through, what that means. We're going to talk about parenting. I think probably that will be what we do on Mother's Day. Seems like a good topic for that day. So we'll do some stuff on parenting. And then we're going to, and I think I want you to, I want you to hang on to this for some of you, because some of you, I know what we say early on will have pain with it for you as you hear it, because we're going to talk about hopes and dreams that you had but didn't really turn out the way you wanted. So the last in this series is going to be entitled Living a Plan B Life When You Had Plan A Dreams. And so we're going to talk that one through a little bit in family. This series I am excited about. Let me just start with an obvious one, which is this. God is not just left-brained. If you think God's just this mechanical left-brain God, you have not read Scripture very well anywhere, but you certainly haven't read the Song of Solomon very clearly. The right side of God's brain, if you want to say it that way, or certainly what He put on the right side of our brain, there's a passion and creativity and a romance and a desire and hope and imagination, and all that fits under the umbrella of God's best for you and God's best for us. I'm living outside the will of God when the kinds of things that Song of Solomon's talking about are not part of my own dreams and hopes and life. And that's true for all of us. And again, as it even relates to singleness. We'll talk about that later. One of the most basic human desires is to love and be loved. God planted that desire. The question is there somebody that I can love deeply and I can give my life to in taking good care of them? Is there someone who will love me deeply? Is there someone that I can let in the deepest part of my life and I'll be safe and looked after and cared for? This book, Song of Solomon or Song of Songs, celebrates that idea. And the answer is, yeah, yay. In fact, can I tell you, this is a party book, but it's a righteous party. The righteous people need to have some sense of what it means to be in God's will in every part of their life. I'll say this, God is no prude. If you've read the book, if you've read other parts of Scripture, God is no prude, I assure you. It may be embarrassing to me at times. In fact, I'm going to have Rick Bushnell be a designated reader on occasions, just so on some of the passages. But actually, I told Megan this, and I'm using Megan here in a little bit, but I told Megan what I was going to say on this part. She said, Dad, you can't tell them that. This is my daughter. I've been told that on many things before, but I've taught the principles of this book many, many times. But the last time I sat and read the entire book through with somebody else listening to it as I read all the chapters out loud was on my honeymoon. Julie and I got married. I got a hotel room on the fifth floor of a hotel in Oklahoma City. I was a nervous, scared kid. We prayed. I read the Song of Solomon. It was an instruction book. Had a great honeymoon. It would have been better if Julie didn't have a room on the fourth floor, but it was still a great honeymoon. I'm just telling you. I want to say to you, the genuine love, in terms of the whole scope of love, genuine love is worth waiting for. It's worth preparing for. It's worth hanging on to. Don't settle for something less. We're in a world that settles. You've been taught to settle your whole life. From the time you were grade school kids and we began to talk about romances and boys and girlfriends, we've been taught a settled idea. And this scripture, like many others, would say, stop ruining your life. The imitation is not worth having. The charade kind isn't any good. The real stuff is incredible. The real stuff is the greatest hopes and joys of your life, the greatest pleasure of your life will come out of the people that you loved and the people that loved you. That will be the highlight of your life. There'll be no bowling trophies that come in second. There'll be no gold watch from 55 years of running the factory. There'll be nothing that comes in anywhere even close to first. Who you loved and who loved you will be the pinnacle of your life. And by the same token, the worst and deepest wounds of your life will come out of decisions you made about who to love and who loved you. There'll be people who say, wow, church is not the right place to talk about some of these subjects. And I do want to say, I want to be sensitive. I understand that we have an audience that's all different maturity level and ages. Let me give you just a heads up. We're going to talk about marriage in particular in some general terms today. Today I introduce it, and next week. On the first Sunday in May is our PG service. The first Sunday in May, we have a wonderful children's department. I invite you to send your kids. You can't go there, but I really invite you to send your kids. We're going to have a PG adults service. Now, again, I understand we're still even there, somewhat of a mixed audience. But when we talk about what God had in mind, let's at least straighten out what is so false and what is meant to be true. Again, some would say, but the church is not the right place for this. Oh, really? You see, I learned about the birds and the bees, but not very appropriately about God's role in the process, nor the context of the birds and the bees. I learned that from Roger and Rick in a hayloft at a barn at Rick's place. I saw the material there. I heard the stories. I heard the jokes. To this day, I can tell you what those jokes were, and we were a set of boys that ended up meeting that hayloft off and on. And as a little boy, I can tell you, we can leave if you'd like to. Sally Jessica Parker can teach, and Hugh Hefner can teach, and Roger and Rick can teach. Or we can say, wait a second, everything that is godly is under the scope of what God cares about. Let's talk about it in the right context. This thing called love is godly, and God's in it. He didn't just give us a grenade and say, here's your sexuality. Kind of fiddle with this grenade for a while and see how it works out for you. There is a partnership with God. The book. To read the book of the Song of Solomon, you have to have some framework. And I'm going to hurry with this because I want to get to the content of it. But in my opinion, this book is written as a musical play. It's a musical, if you want to know how to read it. I don't think it's chronological. I love Tommy Nelson and what he has done with teaching. It's been fabulous. But Tommy Nelson teaches it as being chronological. I don't think so. In fact, if anything, I think it's forward and back and in the moment. In fact, one of the main character actually is a woman, and she has a bit of a stream of consciousness. And you'll just sort of get her thoughts as well as what's spoken. And I think even some of what's spoken comes out of her thoughts. You want to know what a woman thinks? I can tell you, beyond the shadow of a doubt, Song of Solomon is incredibly accurate. I've done marriage counseling for so many years. The world looks level on the number of people I've met with. When my grandkids ask me what I did for a living, my answer will be, I made women cry. I've done that my whole life. There'd be many, many women who would say, wow, Song of Solomon's not my thoughts. I would say to you, we live in a world that we are so bruised and so hurt and we are so jaded, we're afraid to have hopes and dreams anymore. And we're in a culture that learned to protect yourself by not having real dreams. I think even the most jaded individual would say, I'd like to be able to have this kind of love. Some of you, I think, could identify with how I think the book was written. It's written by Solomon, at least I think it is. Now, here's the question, because in verse 1, it does, in the Hebrew, there is a slim possibility, but it is a possibility that it means attributed to Solomon or dedicated to him. But I think Solomon wrote it. Solomon wrote so much truth. God gave him a gift of incredible wisdom. Of all the men who have lived on the face of the earth, Solomon, it describes and said he was given more wisdom than anybody else. And yet, you need to know, he didn't live to follow all the wisdom. His own heart took him other places. In my opinion, this is not autobiographical. In my opinion, I think Solomon writes the book of what should have been. I think he writes with truth and with regret. Many of you can identify with that. You will read this book with truth and your own personal regret. And yet, it's in the middle of a book of transformation. It's in a book about things that are stolen by sin that are returned by grace. This book is not a book about, wow, the train went by and you missed it. This book is about, these are the hopes and dreams that occur in the lives of people who choose godly and wise things. The book will be honest. It'll have emotions about what your heart desires. It'll be explicit. And yet it's not explicit in the sense of being crude or crass. There's a sexuality in this book, no doubt about it, but it's not like our culture markets sexuality. Our culture really understands sex to be about takers and users and self-gratification that uses other people. I have needs too, you know. In fact, our culture uses sex as just another type of entertainment. A godly love is deep water. Deep water. And part of that godly love that he designed from the garden and all the way through, even to the young couple just getting married yesterday, what God designed for them includes sexuality. But in this book, and as God designs it, sex will be chaste and self-giving and devotion and oneness. Let's get into the book. Chapter 1, verse 1 is where the book starts. The title of it is Song of Songs. It's a repetitive phrase. It uses superlative is what it does. You're familiar with Holy of Holies, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. This is Song of Songs. Out of all the things that Solomon was associated with, out of all the things that Solomon has his name on, this is Mr. Solomon's opus. This is the Song of Songs. It has tenderness in it. Now, you've got to read it with a little sense of humor every now and then. There's no doubt about it. Because we come from an entirely different culture. Look at chapter 4. I want you to know, I think there's some of you men who could write poetry like this. I mean, I really think so. Oh, how beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veils are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Especially when you wake up in the morning. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming out from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. Actually, if you know where that's coming from, it's entirely different. We'll get to that. Let me just give one. Here's my disclaimer. If you don't have, Bob Arntz, listen to this. If you don't have one poetic bone in your body, don't try this at home. It won't turn out well. I'm just telling you that right now. Leave this to the experts, okay? So we'll read it with both humor and seriousness. And yet, we start. Chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the maidens love you. Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers. Love is universal in its desire. Saint, scoundrel, old, young. You can go cross-cultural, and we desire to be loved. And we desire to love. Go cross-generational, we desire to love and be loved. My daughter Megan, I asked Megan to come out. Hope she never figures out there's child labor laws because I use her for a lot of things. But I asked Megan if she would just take a snapshot of the world as we know it on just even the radio stations. Just spin the dials. What's the desire of our heart? Thank you.
a child now, 'cause every time I see your bubbly face, I get the tingles in a silly place. It starts in my toes and I crinkle my nose wherever it goes. Always know you make me smile. Please stay for a while now, just take your time wherever you go. Earth angel, earth angel, will you be mine? My darling dear, love you for all time. I'm just a fool in love with you. He's a reason for the teardrops on my guitar. The only one that keeps me wishing on a wishing star. He's a song in the car I keep singing, don't know why I do. Birds suddenly appear every time you are near. Just like me, they long to be close to you. On the day that you were born, the angels got together and decided to create a dream come true. So they sprinkle moon dust in your hair of gold and starlight in your eyes of blue. Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you. There's somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who'll watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch over me.
The desire, is there somebody? Is there somebody who will watch over me safely? Is there somebody I can watch over, and at the end of my life, they would turn back and say, sweetheart, if I had to take the same journey again, I would take it with you because you were so good to me. Everybody wants that. The problem is, in our culture, in our universe as we know it, we lost the road. In fact, we believe a lot of false things about a lot of false roads, thinking they're going to deliver us here, and they don't. In fact, the one way you get to this, our culture has pretty well turned its eyes away from. And that road is overgrown, and few people see it. There's a few solitary people who take that journey and find it. But most are traveling roads where they cut out their hearts. I need to help you visualize this. If you're single, and if you are between the ages of 15 and 30, I need 11 of you. There's nobody designated. Kevin, would you mind helping? I need 11 people.
We'll do it. Come on, right now. We don't have time. Hurry.
Of 15
11 of
and
you.
30.
Stand up, stand. 1, 2, 3,
thank
coming
you.
Down.
Thank you.
Hurry, 4, 5,
thank
6, you. 7. Bring it on, bring it on. Are we here? Hurry.
I need you up on the stage, lined up behind me.
6, 7. Okay, that's not enough. 8, 9. Two more. Right here. 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2.
Okay.
2 for Jesus here.
Here's what we have.
1. One more. Who'll be? Oh, we have 2 more coming. You can both come.
I need 11
okay,
people.
One. Here we go.
I apologize what I'm about to do to them. Last time I called somebody up, I gave them $100. You remember that. This ain't happening this time. I'm just telling you. Actually, I want to give you a statistic, and it's a sad one. It's one that will take your breath away, especially when you visualize it. I'm making these things up about these individuals. Please make no connection to the faces I choose. I'm doing statistical only. But right now, if you go to the heartland, not the ghettos, you go to the heartland, you go to a demographic involving people that have an association with the church and people who will get into relationships. Here's our stats. I don't like them, and you won't like them either. Out of 11 people that are standing here, there are 2 individuals who grew up in the heartland, who grew up in the church, that will be opposed to living together within their philosophy and theory, but they will get so lost relationally, and it will get so confusing to them that 2 of the individuals, would you sit down on the floor if you wouldn't mind, that 2 of the individuals, this one, and again, my apology, but 2 of them will end up moving in with somebody. 10 years later, over 90% of the people who live with someone will not be with the one they moved in with. Within this group of 11, that will leave 4 that will fit this category. 1, 2, 3, 4. These 4 will get married and will have all the hopes and dreams, but those 4 will be divorced. In fact, it's a fractional number I need to give you, but those 4 will get married, and they will not end up with the spouse for a lifetime. They will end up raising their children with somebody different. Would the 4 of you please sit down? They will have divorces. Now that leaves 5. Of this 5, here are the stats. 1, 2, 3, and my apologies again, 4. They will stay married for a lifetime. And there will be many good things in their marriages. But when you ask them about the quality of their marriage, they will speak in terms of disappointment and less than they dreamed. In fact, the question that in particular that divides it is asking this question: do you have the kind of marriage you want your children to have? They will say no. You guys go down. 1 out of 11 who are sitting here within that age group, the predictors of your future for relationships, 1 out of 11 will say, yes, I married a man and we were married for a lifetime, and I would want my children to have that kind of marriage. The stories that could be told to you about pain from those who are sitting here on the floor are incredible stories. They will tell you stories of raising little kids by themselves. They'll tell you stories about abandonment. They will tell you stories of walking on eggs. They will tell you stories of betrayal in their own marriages. They will tell you all kinds of things. 1 will tell you about hard things in their marriage and difficult things. But it was a great marriage. And I want my children to have the same. Let me make a simple observation. You keep doing what the neighbors are doing, you'll keep getting what the neighbors have got. You keep doing what the culture hands out, you'll keep getting what the culture has as its fruit. It is absolutely essential we do something different. Today, I want to talk both to singles who are making preparation for who you'll marry, and I want to talk to married, because there's a transformation of what you'll have to become in order for you to say, this is my story. Thank you, guys. You can go sit down. The key starting point as you relate to what makes a marriage that has quality to it is contained in this book in several places, but one of the starting places is chapter 1, verse 3. We just went through it a minute ago. I want you to notice verse 3, she makes the comment. By the way, the three characters, there's the beloved, which is a little bit passive. She's more of a lover as well, but the beloved, and then there's the lover, and then there's the friends, and so the three characters. Here's what she will say. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Basically, I like you. You know that the sense of smell is stored in the part of the brain that we have both the emotions and our memory. And she's going, when I smell you, there are such pleasing things that come to my mind. But then the next part, your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the maidens love you. That idea of your name has to do with character. It's an actual Hebrew and then the Greek Septuagint. It's the word that means to be etched or to be engraved. What someone is. The reason we say that the name of God is to be honored is not because the letters in the vowel or the letters in the name do that. It's because the character of God is to be honored. When someone's name is to be honored, it's their character. And so what we're talking about here is this concept of who you are, this great respect that she has for him, for his character. In fact, a reoccurring theme in the book will be the respect that everyone has for him. Anytime you read that, there's this respect that you find. Real love will only and can only be the companions of those with high character and high maturity. Where there is high maturity and high character, the opportunity for love is fruitful. Proverbs chapter 20, Proverbs 20 says that many a man claims to have an unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find. Meaning what? It's very possible that anybody can say, I want to love and I will love you and I will take good care of you, or a woman to a man, I will love you. But it's rare. You want to know why? Because the ability to love is so dependent upon character and maturity that it's not possible for most individuals who fit the other category. The book of Proverbs gives this clear voice. You are to be the companion of the wise. That's especially as it relates to marriage. You want to know who the right man for you to marry? It's pretty simple, and we'll talk a little bit about that next week. But you go through the book of Proverbs, and everywhere you find the wise and the godly man, you hold up the guy that you kind of have your eyes on, and you say, how does he fit? How does he fit that mold of a wise and godly guy? You want to know the gal that you ought to marry? You hold up the image of godliness and wisdom and maturity that you see in the book of Proverbs. And sure, sometimes we're getting married as kids, but you better know what road they're on. And this is the road they're on, and this is what they look like. Because if they don't look like that, here's the problem. The fool cannot do it. And I don't mean the fool is an offensive term and he sends some kind of scoundrel or some kind of wretched individual. No, the fool's likable and humorous and fun to be around and picturesque and, gee whiz, a lot of fun. Like to have my parties. But I don't want him as a spouse, because here's the key issue. The things that love requires, and love is a verb. To really love somebody, you have to reach into your character and pull out the skill set that's required. You have to pull out forgiveness and mercy and patience and grace. And the wise and mature individual reaches in for the thing the verb of love requires, and they come out and they have the tools to love their wife and their daughter and their son. But the fool reaches in and he comes out empty-handed. Or he comes out with the same broken way to respond. And the fool wants to love, but he gets so frustrated because it just doesn't work. I just can't make it work. What's wrong with all these people? What's wrong with this situation? What's wrong with this world? What's wrong with all of this? What's wrong with me? And I'm sick and tired of thinking it's me. It's got to be you. For a lot of years, well over 30 years, I've met with couples in problem marriage counseling. Very seldom is the problem the marriage. Very seldom is the problem the marriage. The problem is almost exclusively a lack of wholeness and a lack of maturity in one or both parts. And they're trying, but they just can't quite seem to make it work. You see, the fool will have dopamine and adrenaline. Those are the things that tell us we're in love. Those are those emotions. The fool will have those as every bit as much as the wise individual will. The fool will have a lust and a longing and promises and desires. But you can't make a whole thing out of broken parts. You can't make a great meal out of rancid ingredients. Open up your refrigerator door and you pull out the hamburger meat that you got at Walmart. Was it two weeks ago we got this? You reach down into get the cottage cheese, and does another month or two past expiration mean anything once it's been opened a few times? You get down to the crisper, and well, it used to be crisp. It's pretty brown now, but in fact, it's already starting to digest itself. Look. And you say, but a great cook who tries really hard can make it work. No. You see, wholeness is a requirement. If I'm going to be real frank with you, there are some of you that are struggling in your marriage. And the reason you're struggling in your marriage may not be that you're not trying hard. The trouble is, you've never gone and done the hard work of becoming a whole individual who has a maturity and a wisdom that has been drawn from your Creator and your Redeemer, and you have an incompleteness, and you're just driving yourself crazy. Nobody wakes up at 5 in the morning and says, I think I'll screw up my wife's head today. I think I'll mess with my kids' minds. Nobody wakes up and says, as a wife, today I think I will be an absolute battle axe in my own house and turn things upside down and destroy their lives. Nobody wakes up and says, today I'm going to play the cold shoulder and stand back and make them all. Nobody does that. Everybody wakes up, today I'd like to have a peaceable, loving day. But without wholeness, it keeps falling apart. Chapter 2, verse 7 has an absolute key phrase that keeps being repeated over and over again. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love before its time. What's that mean? Here's what it means. Love is not just the natural result of getting older so you finally become an age where you can love. Love is not just the natural result of passion where you suddenly like sitting next to this girl and I like being with her in class and I like hanging out and I have all kinds of feelings that I have and she's really a nice kid. And if love just came out of those environments, then all you'd have to do is be turned on or wowed or flattered that somebody paid attention to you. Have your head turned. Have your heart race fast. But love has such great power to do both good and harm because it gives access to the deepest parts of somebody's life. It requires a skill set. A skill set that if you bring it, and if you develop it to bring it, you cannot imagine the good you do in somebody's life by real love. You end up partnering with God. You become God's partner. He brought them into the world. He loved them. He redeemed them. He's coming back for them. And you partner with God, and you can do incredibly good things if you step in their life with a skill set of wholeness to love them. But you can do incredibly dangerous and damaging things if you step into your children's lives and you lack maturity and wholeness. I used this illustration several years ago, but I'll repeat it again. You would never, ever ask me to do your brain surgery. But were you to ask me, say, Randy, would you do my brain surgery? Got this tumor, need it now. If I gritted my teeth and said, well, I'll try. I promise you I'll give it my best. I'll try. And I would try. I'm telling you, I would focus. I would do my best. But you and I both know that my trying hard probably wouldn't turn out well for you or me. Now, on the other hand, if you train to do a brain surgery, there's a process, And you say, okay, we're going to go through a lot of years, Randy, and it's pretty intensive training, but we have a target, Randy, so that when you begin to get access to somebody's head, you do good and not harm, and you get blessing. And so you train me for a lot of years. There's a pretty good chance with the training and the process, yeah, I probably could do that. This idea of don't waken love before it's time is in the context of this. There's something you have to be, and there's something they have to be, or we're just going to be two fools who just beat each other up. Those of you that are single, it's worth being single. You are to be admired. It's Kevin's line, and other people have used it, and I've used it a bunch too, but anybody can be married if you set your standards low enough. There's something you have to be. Those of you that are married, stop taking advantage of your mate. They may have learned to live at peace with you, but until you grow up, you are never the blessing God intended you to be. Grow up. It's time to grow up in Christ and become mature. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 talks about being yoked together, and opposites can't be yoked. You may not think that's too romantic, but I got to tell you, in one real sense, 33 years ago, Julie and I were yoked. My walk with Christ has been shared with her. My ministry has been shared with her. The raising of my kids has been shared with her. My hopes and my dreams. When I'm most discouraged and I most want to quit and want to go do something else and air up tires for a living or something, I promise you I'm yoked with her. When I have failed and failed at the things that mattered most to me, I've been yoked with her. The thing that has saved my bacon is I have been yoked with a mature and a godly woman of character. And I have been loved. You cannot compromise. You cannot compromise on this issue of character, nor can you put it off if you're in a marriage. It's time to grow up. Compatibility is not about common interest. You can have all the compatibility that you want around common interest, and bless your heart. Compatibility is not about sharing life circumstances. Genuine compatibility is two people who have grown up in the Lord and have a wholeness, and out of that wholeness they serve Him and one another. We're going to pick this up next week. That's our starting spot, but I have to finish with one thing first. Turn, if you would, to Proverbs, the 8th chapter. This is absolutely essential. I want to pick this up again, this idea of don't waken love before it's time and all those things. Proverbs chapter, or Proverbs. I didn't mean Proverbs. I meant Song of Solomon, chapter 8. Those of you that are reading the screen here could tell it, but those on the radio wouldn't know. Song of Solomon. This is quite a little passage. Here's what it says. This is from the brothers, or the friends, but it comes from the brothers. We have a young sister, and her breasts are not yet grown. I realize that's a little more frank than we sometimes speak in our culture, but here's what he's saying. This is a young girl. She is not yet ready for a marriage or a family. She's just a child. What should we do for our sister for the day she's spoken for? What do we do with this immature girl who's not yet ready for marriage or family? Verse 9, if she is a wall, they respond. This is the brothers. If she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. If she is a door, we will enclose her with panels of cedar. It's a pretty incredible passage when you work through it. Here's what it's saying. We have this young girl, and we're going to put our arm of protection over her. We don't know what she's going to be. We don't know. If she's a wall, that is, she doesn't make herself accessible just to anybody and everybody. She doesn't have her head turned just because the kid's popular at school. She doesn't have her head turned just because this guy flatters her. She's a wall. She's not just open and accessible to everyone. She's not just indiscreet, but she has built a protection for herself. If she's that, we're going to build towers of silver on top of her. We will be on top of this wall she builds. And we will defend her as this wall. If she's a door, oh, we hope she's not a door. But if she wants to make herself accessible to anyone and everyone, We will enclose her with panels of cedar. Actually, I like the translation that's actually stronger, and it's accurate. We're going to board that door up. We're going to put boards over that door, and it's through us you're going to have to get access to this girl. Why? Because genuine love takes the time of maturity and character, and we're not taking shortcuts. Parts of my high school life I'm not all that proud of. In fact, several places I would say I lived stupidly. But there were chapters in my life I think I did get it better. The only righteous fight I almost got into was with a boy that was dating my sister. My sister Gwen is 2 years younger than I am. She's one of the most godly women I've ever known. My sister is a phenomenal individual. I don't speak enough about Gwen. She's quiet. She is deep. But in high school, Gwen got a little lost in the woods, at least in some, just with her mind a little bit and her emotions about herself. It's just anecdotal, but she was a cheerleader. And she was dating a guy in town who was pretty notorious for his womanizing. He was a year younger than I am in school, and he and I played football together. And I remember the day that I took him aside, and it was in a corner of the locker of the room, and I told him, this is my sister. And my sister has not yet figured out some things in life, and she's struggling. My sister's spiraling some right now, but if you do 1 ounce of damage, I will tell you, I will hold you accountable. Actually, what I said was, I'll tear your head off. I might reword that now as an older guy. But it was basically one junior in high school talking to a sophomore in high school. I don't know that he was afraid of me, but I do know this. He did understand that my sister was not left unprotected, that I was a brother who wanted to build a tower on top of the wall or to put planks over the door till she figured out maturity. And I'm telling you, she married a great guy, and she's had a great marriage, and they've got great kids. And I look at that. You see, wholeness and maturity is what's required. Most of you that are struggling with lesser dreams, we need to talk about this issue. We'll pick it up next week.